Before we begin, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship, to venerate this Tathagata, the one who sacrificed countless eons, countless lifetimes, fulfilling his perfections to free minds from the shackles of samsara. Who could have become an arahant at the feet of the Lord Dipankara Buddha, decided to jump back into the fires on samsara to save other beings. Just take a few moments to worship the Lord Buddha by chanting Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Welcome everyone to the monastery, where during the rainy season we have droughts, and during the drought seasons we have rain. I think it's been raining for the last almost a week, semi-continuously. We have minutes, somewhat hours of no rain, and then again rain. Even though, rain doesn't know the rainy retreat has finished. But is the rain a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, do you like the rain or not like the rain? Do you want the rain or not want the rain? Waking up in the morning. I think one of the most difficult things to do is waking up when it's raining. Especially on a Saturday or a Sunday. When you hear the rain, that's almost like a signal saying that, stay in bed for a bit longer. Because it's cold. And you're snuggled in bed. Very comfortable. But yet, everyone in our monastery has to wake up at what time? 4:30. Regardless, whether it's raining, whether it's very cold, very hot. If it snows one day, even though it's snowing, at 4:30, we have to wake up. And I think that's one of the most, it's a very good advantage that we have. Because that really tests our determination. It's a way we can test our determination, because we have to wake up, whether you like it or not. This is the advantage of having a teacher that says, this is what has to happen. You have to wake up. Now it's a fight between what you want and what you need. A fight between what you want and what you need. This is when the quality of determination is very strong. How determined are you? How close are you? Or how determined are you to wake up? Another way of thinking about it, those of you who may not reside in the monastery, is waking up to an alarm. I remember, I think I've told you as well, that back in my past, that to wake me up, I needed several alarms. Not just one single alarm. If I wake up at 6:30, it's not an alarm at 6:30, I wake up and go and do what I need to do. No, it used to be 6 o'clock, 6:15, 6:25, 6:30, 6:30. And eventually it's mother who wakes me up and says, "Buddha, now it's too late, let's go to school." See, even to these alarms, See how much determination you have to wake up early in the morning. See what excuses you give yourselves. It's raining today. It's cold. Yesterday I slept, you know, a little bit late. You know, I think I woke up twice in the night. I wasn't able to go to sleep after that. I mean, you know, we are, as a race, very good at making excuses. When we can't do something, we have a list. We bring out a list in our pocket and we say, okay, what excuse can I bring out today? You know, it was raining. My alarm wasn't working. And we bring out a list and we say, you know, this is why I couldn't do this. This is why. You know, these are, you know, our ability to give excuses is one of the most biggest things that hinder us from achieving what we want. Because we, you know, say it's okay. Something happens, it's okay. Not that something happens, let's find a way to not let this happen again. Instead, we say, it's happened, it's okay. We almost justify it. We say, you know, I made a mistake, but I made the mistake because it's not my fault. Instead, the alarm didn't ring. Instead, it was raining. Not that it was raining and so I didn't want to wake up. No, it was raining, therefore I didn't wake up. Always trying to point it somewhere else because it feels good. Because when we point at ourselves, we are, you know, self-scolding almost. That's my fault, I should have done that. No, it feels better to point out inside and say, you know, it wasn't working, that didn't happen, this didn't happen. That's why we love excuses. We absolutely love excuses. And I know through my life of how many excuses I used to give. And I know how now, you see, it's only afterwards. After a while, do you realize how, you know, how silly it was to have made an excuse? Because at that moment, when you're giving the excuse, it feels like this is the best thing to do at this moment. Give an excuse and justify what you did and then move on. But after a while, when you look back at that situation, you think, well, why did I give that excuse? Why could I not just accept it? Because normally we give an excuse when? When we're scared. When we're scared. We give an excuse when we're scared. Scared of what? Scared that we will be either told off, or either people think badly of us, or something's going to happen to my what? My image. Or my ego. Something's going to happen to my image, and therefore, you know, I don't like it, so therefore I'm going to give an excuse to justify it, so people don't think badly of me. Excuse.com. We are the eternal fountain of excuses. You know, whenever you meet a crossroad, you have a choice to go left or right. Whenever you go to a crossroad, this is a road, don't worry, nothing else, not T, it's a road. You have a choice to go left or right. Now let's say you are taking, you know, you're going somewhere, And the direction that you need to take
is right.
The right direction that you don't want to take is left. Now let's say, you know, you're going on this crossroad. You're lost. Let's say, you know, your phones aren't working. Google Maps is not working for some reason. And you want to know which way is right. What is the one of two information you need to go on the right track or go on the right path? What is the one of two informations? Because there's two things that can be given, and that's enough for you to know which track to go or which path to take. What are those two information? One of them is, if you take a right, you'll be going to your destination. What's the other one? Don't take left. That's enough, right? If someone says, don't take left, what do you take? The right. Now, something that, you know, lots of us are scared of, lots of us fear, is being confronted or being scolded or being told off by a teacher. And if you think about it, if you look in through your entire life, the amount of things that we do to remove ourselves from those scenarios, those situations, is endless. If you think about it, from the moment you woke up as a small child to this very moment, look at the amount of things that you do, not because you think it's good or you think it's right, because you don't want to be told off, or you don't want to be, you know, you don't want someone to say something about it. For example, when you were young, right, in your schooling age, why did you go to school? Why did you go to school? I went to school to learn, to you know, pass my exams, to be educated. That's why I went to school. No, ask our children here today. They'll say what? I go to school because if I don't go to school, Amma Tata is going to start shouting at me. If I don't go to school, when I get to school, then my teachers are going to ask me, why wasn't I here yesterday? And because I'm scolded, I'm going to school today. Because I'm going to get scolded, I'm going to go to school today. What about brushing your teeth? How much easier is it to go to sleep without brushing your teeth? Now, you know, at the Noble Hearts, you know, you see a lot of this. These young children finding many ways to escape brushing their teeth. So what do we have to do? We have to actually, you know, get that toothbrush, put that toothpaste on the brush, and stick the toothbrush into their mouth and send them to the sink, or else they won't do it. But, you know, if you think about it, why do we brush our teeth? Now we brush our teeth because we know that, you know, if we don't brush our teeth, you know, plaque, then it's going to erode, and then we're going to have toothaches. Technically, we brush our teeth not because of its, you know, because it looks nice, because we're scared of what? Toothaches, plaques, if our teeth become yellow. And then if it becomes yellow, then what happens? Someone might say something about it. And if someone says something about it, I'm going to feel really bad about it. So again, still, it's not scolding per se, but it's something that will hurt who? Hurt this ego. Hurt my pride. Hurt this image that I have. So if you think about it, we do lots and lots of things just because what? We are scared. Scared something. Something will hurt. Not hurt physically, but hurt this hurt mentally. Hurt what? This mental image that we have of ourselves. You know, actually, just take a minute just to think about the amount of things that you do. Because you're scared of being told off. You're scared that, you know, will my reputation be ruined? Now, I'm not saying that it's wrong. I mean, you should brush your teeth in the morning. You should brush your teeth at night. You should take a shower every day. I mean, those are, you know, basic human requirements. However, if you do something because you don't want to be scolded, then there's something wrong with that. Because scolding is what? Or someone telling you off is what? Someone telling you, don't go left. if you go left, this is what's going to happen. So don't go left. And when someone praises you, that's like saying, you know, take the right. So whether you're being scolded or being praised for what you are doing, you are being told, you know, what you're being told what path to take anyway. Either don't go left or, you know, go right. Both saying the same thing, whether you're praised or scolded, whether you are said, you know, whether you are appreciated for your actions or whether you are scolded for your actions. Either way, you're taking the path. But yet we're terrified of being scolded. We're terrified that someone will say something about it. We're so terrified that something will happen to my image that I have, my reputation, my ego, my pride. We are scared of that. And because we are scared, we start to avoid situations that we get scolded. Even though that's helping us on our path. Even though that's showing us what direction to take. So we are scared of being scolded. Fear is something that's a hindrance to your Nibbana. Fear. Understanding you need to understand why you do what you do. But if you do it because you are scared that you will be told off, that is something that hinders your path, slows it down. Because you are avoiding what? Avoiding a moment where that you're scolded, which means there are moments that I like and moments that I don't like. And if I have a moment that I like, you know, I want to keep going doing that. The moments I don't like, which means I have an attachment or I like these things. I don't like these things. Which means we're seeing a difference here. And you know, the great Arhat Rahula Maharatanwanse, before he became an Arahant, you know, it's very interesting, you know, when we talk about these stories of the time of the Buddha, we think about, you know, how quickly they all attained Nibbana, right? You know, how simple their journey was. But when you think about it, some journeys weren't that simple. Because the great Arahant Rahula became a Sotapanna at what age? But became an Arahant at what age? Around, if I remember correctly, my memory does fail me sometimes, either 26 or 28. Somewhere in his 20s. And we always appreciate how, you know, the great Arahant Rahula, before he was an Arahant, you know, he would take a handful of sand and throw it up and say, may I get as many advices as there are grains of sand in the air. If you think about it, he became a Sotapanna at 7, but an Arahant in his 20s. Say that's around 15 years. What do you think his 15 years was like? Why do you think he throws these sand in the air? Do you think at the age of 7 he thought, you know what, I want advice, so I'm going to throw sand in the air? As a 7-year-old, were you someone who really wanted advice? And not to forget, he was the son of Prince Siddhartha, which is technically who he may have felt that I was the son of who? The Buddha. So do you think as a 7-year-old, he would think, you know what, please everyone give me advice? Because I think something that we fail to realize, these stories are, you know, they almost seem as like a fantasy. But these were real people. Real people with real feelings. I almost imagine, you know, Rahula to be one of the most mischievous. One of the most mischievous. As a 7-year-old, you know, getting scolded over and over again. You know, not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Because if he was, you know, why would he attain Nibbana at the age of 26, 28? You should have done it in 1-2 years. You know, great Arhant Sariputta, you know, they did it in months. Dhatya did it in seconds. Because, you know, in my head at least, he was very mischievous. Not just mischievous, but got told off every day. And, you know, children, when they get told off, you know what, they come to this point where they think, you know what, I can't do this, you know, it's not going to work. I don't like being told off. What can I do? And I'm pretty sure that the great Arhant Rahula also had this idea. But instead of, you know, deciding to give up, he goes to his teacher, and the teacher says, you know what, this is what advice is. This is why they give you this advice. This is why they get scolded. It's not a bad thing. It's a treasure. But still to this day, we don't see it to be a treasure. We see it to be something that we have to avoid. Because we don't see it to be something that helps us get onto the path. Something that directs us onto the path that we need to take. That's why, you know, he would take a handful of sand and throw it up in the air and say, may I get this many advice today? May I get, technically saying, may I get scolded this many times today? As many grains of sand there are in this air, may I please get scolded? Because he understood the advantage of being scolded. I mean, we all love praise. We all love being praised. You know, madam, you know, you've done so well. You know, you've done this place. You've done this very well. We love being appreciated. Love being praised. So technically, you know, we as a human race love going towards praise. That's why usually we become almost strongly attracted to people who praise us. Because we want to continue to feel what? Good about ourselves. So we want to always be what? Praised. Think about it, right? As a, you know, part of our Sila Shraga Shavikas, you know, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, monks and whatnot. There's always, you know, a group of people, at least one person, who always is like, you know, very, very nice, very, very good at praising, you know, starts praising other people and saying, Mahatmya, you know, you did that very well, well done. Or, Mahatya, you work really hard. You know, I saw you putting up these flags and you were working really hard. You know, I saw that. Whether you know it or not, you really do like that Mahatya or Mahatmya. Why? Because they make you feel what? Good. Because they praise you. Because as we all love to be praised. But when your Kalyana Mitra, fellow Sila Shravaka Shravika, fellow Anagarika Anagarika, fellow monk, scolds you for something you've done. Maybe not scold. Let's not use the word scold, because in our head, scolding has a very, very tough thing. Or at least, you know, shows you a mistake. We are very quick to distance ourselves. We are very quick to take a step away from the person. To say, you know, maybe, you know, this association, you know, maybe the person may tell me off a lot and, you know, who knows what will happen. You know, my prasada hita is gone when I'm with this person. You know, my mind full of joy and rapture is gone when I meet this person, because this person always shows my mistakes. I don't want to be with this person. And so you distance yourself. You really do. Consciously or unconsciously, you distance yourself. Because why? You don't like it. You don't like when people start poking at your mistakes, your flaws. Because in your head, you know, you want to be the most perfect person you possibly can. And to be perfect, you have to hide what? Your imperfections, your flaws. Not correct them, hide them. And that's why, you know, that's why when you get angry, what is your first instinct to do, in the monastery at least? Are you angry? No. I mean, you very clearly, you know, you're cross, you know, you can see it. But when someone asks you, like, you look angry. No, I'm not angry. Because you try to hide the imperfections, you try to hide the flaws. Now, that's not saying you know, whenever you get angry to overreact and start screaming and shouting, of course not. But you try to hide these feelings, you try to hide, you know, your imperfections. Because what do you want to do? You want to pretend that you are perfect. Let's say, I don't know, one day for dhani, let's say that they're serving something that we don't get too often. Say for dhani, they're serving, for some reason, they're serving cutlets. The person next to you asks, you know, Mahatmi, you know, I don't want to eat my cutlet. Can I give it to you? Let's say you have a strong attachment to cutlets. No, thank you. Why do you say no, thank you? Why is it? Inside your brain or your mind is telling you, Vani, please. You actually hold out the arms more just a bit further out so they can, you know, put it in. But you're like, no, thank you. Because you're hoping them, they say, no, don't worry, you know, I'll give it. You're hoping that they'll say, you know, don't worry, you know, you could take it and, you know, at least half. I mean, this is you see this a lot. One cutlet or half a cutlet? Half a cutlet seems better, right? Because it's like only half of it, not the whole thing. Or like half a biscuit. So they're asking, you know, I have three biscuits. You know, I'm having these three biscuits. So, but then, you know, your neighboring person decides to say, oh, you know, I have, this is too much for me. Do you want a biscuit? You want the biscuit, but what do you say? No, thank you. Half a biscuit. Half biscuit? Okay. Because why? That shows I'm not attached to the biscuit, but I'm getting half the biscuit. Because why are you trying to hide? Hide these imperfections, hide these flaws. Let's say you're hungry. You are actually hungry. Let's say for some reason you missed breakfast and dinner and lunch the other day. So after 24 hours, this is the first meal you're having. But let's say you're going on a dunga trip. Right? Not Pindapatha, but the dunga trip. And for some reason, the person who served you only served a very small amount of rice. Now, we can't say anything about it. We accept what we get served. But let's say you're still hungry. You're still really hungry. Doesn't it feel really weird to go and serve yourself again? Because what do you think? What will others think of me? Will they think I'm greedy? Will they think that you know I'm fat? That's why, you know, if I serve myself twice. See, again, because we don't like this. We love being praised. Of course, love being praised. But we avoid being told off. We avoid being scolded. So we try to hide our imperfections. We try to hide our flaws. We try to be the best person that we think that we can be. Perfect. Like I said, when we have this idea of, you know, I'm trying to be the perfect person. Or when you're trying to maintain a character. I mean, that happens. Through life, we maintain characters. You can see this very well. You know, do you associate, you know, you're the person, say, your best friend or the person you associate the most, the same way you associate, you know, another person? No, because you always have a character that you maintain. That, you know, in front of this person, I act, you know, as a very calm, very, very, this, very, very, you know, gentle and stuff and person. But when you're with your friend or with someone that you know very well, you know, out comes the actual monster. No, I think, you know, You all know this, you know. And I've the front door of your house is a portal. It's a portal. One side, you are an angel. On the other side, you are the devil. The moment you step outside in the eyes of the world, you are, pretending that everything's it's fine. You're pretending that, you know, everything's going so well, everything's happy, and, you know, I'm okay. But the moment you step inside, does the real person come out to play? No, nothing is fine, everything's horrible, everything is terrible, because you're trying to hide, trying to show the world that, you know, because you're trying to get this appreciated, praised. This is why, you know, the Buddha says, don't fall for that. Don't fall for praise. Don't go following praise. Don't go searching for praise. Because by searching for praise, what you're doing is you're just following this side. You're just taking half the advantage that you can take. Because praise can sometimes turn to what? Flattery. And what's flattery? Flattery is when you hear, when someone tells you something that you want to hear. Even though it's not genuine. Even though it's not real, they don't feel it. They say it because they know that's what you want to hear. And the moment that happens, again, just like before, the moment you are praised, then what do? You bind yourselves onto this person. You want to be then in their association. Why? Because they are giving you what? Praise. They are feeding your what? Ego. They are giving you, they are making you feel what? Better, greater. Making your ego rise. But your teacher? Mahatmya, why did you do this week? Why did you do this? Why did you get angry? You know, the best teachers are the teachers that assume. The best teachers are the teachers that assume. Assume that you've done something. Before you even told them, they assumed. Huh? What did you do? Nothing. Are you sure? Because what do you feel? You feel that I'm going to be scolded for something that I haven't done. I mean, that's one of the worst feelings, right? Being scolded or being told over something that you haven't done. Well, you haven't done anything, but yet someone comes and tells you, why did you do this? You know, technically, that's just free information, isn't it? Technically, that's free information. I mean, that's like, you know, I think one of the best examples I think our teachers have given us is that, you know, when you go shopping, do you buy everything in the shop? You know, you don't have a dog. Do you still buy dog food? You don't have children at home to play with toys. Do you still buy all the toys? No, when you go to the shop, you buy, you take what you need, and the rest you just leave. But when it comes to a person giving you advice or, you know, telling you something, we seem to take everything. You see that person, you know, my teacher thinks I'm a horrible person. My teacher thinks that maybe, you know, he probably thinks that, you know, I'm a person filled with desire. I'm a very short-tempered person. All you need to do is poke me and I'm going to start getting angry. My teacher thinks that. But when you're getting told off of something that you haven't done, well, that's just free information. Don't walk backwards. Okay. If I ever walk backwards, I'll remember this. I'm not. Why did you? Let's say I don't know. You know what's the things you get blamed for that you haven't done? Oh, okay, let's say this. Why have you taken my seat? You know, I booked this seat, I took this seat because, it's the one the best view of Guru Har. I've booked this seat. Why did you take it? I haven't. No, this is, why did you, I sat down here first. Now, automatically, the first thing that comes to your head is, when someone blames you for something that you haven't done, what's the first thing that comes to your head? The first thing that comes to your head is what? To tell them what? I haven't done that. It's not me. You're saying it's not you for what reason? To protect who? It's not me. It's not me. Someone else. Please don't blame me. Someone else has done it. It's not me who did this. But technically, you should be able to accept that as well with a smile on your face. When someone scolds you for something you haven't done, you should be able to accept that with a smile on your face. Because why? It's not different. It's information. They're telling you not to take this path. Okay, great. Don't take left. Thanks. Because then I'm going to take what? Right. Thank you for the information. When someone scolds you for what you have or haven't done, all they're giving you is information. But the only thing that hurts is that it hurts what? Your ego. Therefore, we don't like to be scolded. But that's the thing. That's the mindset that we have to get rid of. Scolding is scolding. Getting told off is getting told off. It's just information that we have. What is the worst way to be told off? What is the worst way to be told off? Today, in the middle of Guru Har's sermon, he's going to call you up onto the stage. Right? Don't worry, the camera will be zooming out. Right? Don't worry. It will be zoomed out a bit to see the entire stage. And Guru Handru will scold you for something that you haven't done in front of the audience of who knows how many. Live as well as online. My reputation. Now thousands of people will think I'm a horrible person. Thousands of people will label me to be, a horrible person. Let's say in front of the entire audience, Guru Hanuman says, you shouldn't steal from the sasana. You shouldn't steal from the sasana, because those of you who steal from the sasana will go into the four great hells. And he says that, looking at you, and then the camera's there, everyone's looking. Now everyone's going to think that I'm a what? A thief. That I have stolen from the sasana. What's going to happen to my reputation? Now how am I going to face the monastery now? Now when I come in, all the Sila Shravikas are going to come and ask me, what did you steal? People are going to side-eye and give me side-eyes. How am I going to live anymore? And you're going to create this entire massive world of problems because of what? Because you are scolded in front of everyone. But think about it. Think about it. Take a moment to actually think about it. What is actually happening? A mind arises. A mind passes. A mind perceives sound. And so, you know, you get on stage, this all happens, and you get off, and then you wake up. And you find out it's all a dream. It's not real. Well, whether you are actually on stage or in a dream, both of them are exactly the same, are they not? Both of them are exactly the same, because why? What are you feeling? You felt as though the mind arose with sound. Well, in a dream, it's more of a thought. But basically, it perceived that it's being scolded. Or technically, it perceived sound. The mind interpreted that and said it's being scolded. And it kept adding on to this. Scolded in front of on a stage by Guru Hamdru in front of an audience, and it's being recorded. And all of this you start to feel. But in reality, what happened? The mind arrives, the mind passed. Sound was perceived. Then where was the audience? Audience was perceived. Where's Guru Hamdru? Guru Hamdru was perceived. So basically, you are suffering because of your perception. You perceived it. You perceived it in your world. I perceived it in my world. The person next to you perceived it in their world. So did you get up on stage, get scolded by Guru Hamdru in front of the massive audience and got recorded and was posted online? How much of that actually happened? In reality? In reality, what happened? The mind arose, the mind passed, and you perceived. However, when ignorance and attachment comes into play, and vexation and insanity comes into play, we have our best friend Jati, best friend ego, who says what? In front of 2,000 people, how many, who knows how many people watch it online? And so what do? You go on YouTube and, you know, check, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. 4,000 people watched it online. You wake up the next morning, you say, 12,000 people watched it online. What am I going to do now? How am I going to face society? That all comes because of who? Oh, sorry. Because of what? Because of our best friend? Ego. See, you know, if you took a moment, I actually saw it as it is. Whether you are scored, because you... The worst thing is you're scolded for something that you know you haven't done. Let's say you haven't stolen. And technically, Guru Hamdru hadn't even said that you've stolen. He just looked at you and said, what? You shouldn't steal from the sasana. That's what he says. He didn't say, sir, madam, you shouldn't see. No, he just looked at you and said, you shouldn't steal from the sasana. You made this massive problem up. You built the problem up from the ground level. You built it up and you're suffering. If you were to take a step back and see it for what it truly is, now you're able to see it. Because, you know, if you haven't done it, that's okay. That means if that situation arises in the future, when you get to that crossroad, you know not to take left. When you get to that crossroad, you now know not to take left. So whenever you get the chance, say, you know, let's say you go into a place and you see something on the chair that belongs to the sasana. Now you know not to take. Great. You are saved from doing bad in the future. What's wrong with that? What's wrong is not with that. It's both with the ego. How hurt do you feel? How it feels as though someone's taken a dagger and pierced it through you. That's what hurts. Ego is what hurts. Not what happens. It's not what happens. It's the ego. I didn't do it. So what, you know, when the moment you come off stage and you come back and you sit down, the first thing you do is turn to the person next to you and say, I don't know what God of Guru Han, I didn't do it. Trying to justify what? Trying to show other people what? That's not right. It's not like this. But remember, there are three things that you can't keep hidden. There are three things you can't keep hidden. What are they? The sun, the moon, and the truth. Let the truth come out by itself. There are three things you can't keep hidden. The sun, the moon, truth. Let the truth come out by itself. Because that's when you can show your true colors. How? After all this, you know, and then, you know, somewhere, you know, after a while, say Guran says, you know, that Mahatmya that came on stage, I was just testing her. Now what does everyone feel? Really? Guran was testing this person? And that Mahatmya didn't, you know, when she was on stage, her smile didn't change. Smile didn't change. What a great person she is. What a great person he is. Now the world will truly know who you are. Just think about it. Imagine you do something, or you haven't done something, and your teacher scolds you for that. You say nothing about it. Your teacher doesn't ask you, just scold you and say, you know, scold you mean tells you off saying don't do this again. And you just stay quiet. 2 weeks later, your teacher finds out that you haven't done it. That you haven't done it. What does your teacher now feel? How great my student is. How great my student is. Now your teacher is thousands of times more impressed. Because you kept quiet. That's the thing, you know. Never give an excuse. Even though the moment you get scolded, the first thing that comes to your tongue is, oh, you know, this is what happened. It gives some sort of excuse. Don't give it. Don't say anything until what? Until they ask, why haven't you done this? Then you can say, I haven't done this because of this. Until they ask, stay quiet. Don't open your mouth. Feel the burning sensation inside of you. You know, the ego, you know, pounding on your mind, saying, you know, go and tell them. Tell them that you didn't do it. Say this, say that. Give this excuse, give that excuse. When you can't give an excuse, what do? You lie. Again, you lie to do what? To save your ego, your pride, your jati. To protect jati, you lie. See, you know, if you were just to take a moment, to take a step back and let it and see it for what it is, you're able to escape from all that. Now, I know I'm talking to, you know, people who have taken a massive leap, you know, on that journey to Nibbana. So I'm not going to say, you know, because there are people that, you know, if they know that they're going to be scolded, say they've done something wrong. So what they'll do is before their superiors find out, they go to their superiors and tell what? Other people's mistakes. Why? So the superior is now angry at not just one person, but a group of people. Which means the scolding that will be received will be what? Now, I know of a person who came and told me this as well. Is that whenever they've done something wrong, they will go and tell the head mistakes of others. for two reasons. One reason is so, you know, before they get told off, I mean, before the person gets told off, now there's a group of people to be told off. Now the amount of scolding reduces. As well as, then the amount of scolding will also reduce because the head will believe that the reason why they've come and told this person's mistake is because they're jealous or they feel they want to retaliate. Now, I know all of you don't have that. I know all of you, you know, living and breathing in the monastery, you know, you have so many good qualities that you don't go around telling people's mistakes to others. Gossiping or telling or finding faults in others. And not just finding faults. Finding faults is human. I mean, you see something wrong, that's wrong. But instead, not just finding faults, but going around telling it to other people. You know, the other day I saw this happen, this person's like this, that person like this. Gossiping? We've gone beyond that. You know, we've gone beyond that. We no longer feel the need to feel superior by gossiping someone's mistakes. But people do that. I mean, we all love gossip, don't we? Think about your past. You know, there's always that one person that you always go to because you know they've got all the information. So you go to the person and all you have to do is start talking and they start, you know, telling you about everything. Oh, you know, this happened to this person, this happened to that person. And you collect all these stories. Why do you collect these stories? To make yourself feel what? I know all of this. I'm better than all these people. I mean, that's why people can't leave celebrities alone. People can't leave celebrities alone. If you are a celebrity, or if you are famous in some sort of way, people will always find a way to search for some sort of mistake, some sort of flaw, and spread it around the world. Why? Because they feel so inferior. They feel so inferior. I mean, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I know lots of people do this, is that when they see an actress that they like a lot, the first thing they type on online is, actress without makeup. And they go, oh, you know, it's all makeup and glamour and costume. You know, it's lighting and smoke and magic. You know, they're not like this in real life. Why? So they can feel that, because they feel inferior. But when they find some sort of gossip, they can feel, I am not like that. I am superior. Ego at play. You know, jati finds itself everywhere. You know, you take a moment just to think about it. Jati is absolutely everywhere. Finding itself in every nook and cranny. Everywhere. Yeah, so, you know, we love gossip for that reason. I mean, I don't think any one of you, like, listens to gossip and changes themselves. Do we? You know, I heard this person was stealing. And you think, okay, from today onwards, I'm not going to steal. You don't think that. Instead, you think, that person stole? Really? Oh, no. And then you start telling other people as well. You think, you know, I found out about this person. This person's not the same. It's not the person that you think the person is. Because you feel superior. Because in reality, I mean, if you looked at it in a most humane way, if you see someone's mistake, what should you do? If you see someone's mistake, what should you do? Go and tell them. Excuse me, you know, you have this mistake. If there is no point telling them, then tell someone who can change them, i.e. their teachers. And say, teacher, you know, this person's like this. How can you help him, or what can I do to help him? Instead, what do we do? Oh, you know, you go to these corners. not really. You don't go to corners anymore. You don't need to go to corners. All you have to do is get into a group of people, and out comes information. Out comes all this information. Because why? The ego. So coming back to scolding. Coming back to being told off. It doesn't matter. Let yourself be told off. See if you can accept it. See if you can accept it for what it is. Not trying to hide it. So next time someone tells you off, see if you can listen to it. Without giving an excuse. Without trying to change their way they think of you. Think about this, right? When you go to your teacher with a problem, we talked about a bit about this last time as well. Do you rehearse the problem in your head? Changing the way that you say it so your teacher doesn't think badly of you. Do you hide certain information? I won't tell my teacher about the cake I ate last night, but I'll tell them how my child got really angry at me. What for? Because I ate the chocolate cake, but I won't tell you that information. Do you hide information? Do you try to protect yourself in front of your teacher? But in the Dasadhamma Sutra, the first thing that the Buddha says is what? Vevannihammi. Meaning, be see-through. Be like glass. Let your teacher see you, see straight through you. Be open. So tell the teacher what you did, how you did it, into A to Z, without hiding all these things, without protecting yourself. Because by protecting yourself, you're telling the doctor, I have a headache. But you're hiding all the other symptoms. So the doctor will prescribe what? Just Panadol. Just paracetamol. Whereas you actually needed some antibiotics. You know, if that doesn't work, you need to be admitted to the hospital. But all you do is you tell them about the headache. Give them only the headache symptom. Because the other symptoms are, you know, they're not supposed to, you know, I can't tell the doctor about these symptoms. That's why, you know, you should be able to tell your teacher the story from A to Z without hiding anything. Without trying to change information just so the teacher doesn't think badly of you. See, when you tell a teacher the problem, you also add parts of the Dhamma. Not because that's how you contemplate it, but because you want to tell your teacher that I also know Dhamma. So for example, you know, say, say something happened, and let's say, a small child came running up to you and spilled their cup of water on you, and you felt angry. Do you go to your teacher and say, you know, I got angry when the small child had accidentally threw water on me? Or do you say, you know, you tell them that, but also you say, but I also know, you know, it's all cause and effect. I also know it's all anicca. Not because that's what you contemplated on, but to make sure your teacher knows that, you know, I am also someone who practices. To protect that, your side is to protect yourself from that side as well. That I am a person who practices my path. Therefore, this is how I contemplated. I mean, you should tell the teacher what you contemplated on, of course. But for the reason you want them to know what you contemplated on, not to protect yourself. This is the thing, when it comes to ego is the biggest hindrance, is the biggest hindrance to your journey to Nibbana. And funny thing is, pride and ego is the last thing that is removed before you become an arahant. It's a trap, isn't it? Because of ego, you can't attain Nibbana. To attain Nibbana, you have to get rid of ego. you're always going to be stuck in this. That's why, you know, sometimes you have to force yourself to start. You have to force yourself to start. Not let it happen, because it's not going to happen like that. Sometimes you're going to have to, you know, where even though an excuse is on the tip of your tongue, you have to keep quiet. Force yourself to keep quiet. Because that's how it starts. After you keep quiet, now the next time you are able to take the next step forward. You know, you have to, you know, the path has to be walked. You're not going to somehow teleport yourself to the end of the road. You have to walk. You have to walk the path. To walk the path, the first step, you have to force yourself to do it. You have to think about it. Once you start walking, the process of walking becomes easier. Let's say, you know, you have to go from, walk from here all the way to, say, Kandy. The hardest step is which one? The first one. Because you think, oh, I have to walk all the way to Kandy. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't know, how far is it? Me and my Sri Lankan geography is terrible. How far is it from here to Kandy? Anyone know? How long is the drive? We know this, don't we? 4 hours? 3 hours drive. 3 to 4 hours drive. So if you have to walk it, if it takes 3 hours to drive to Kandy, if I have to walk it, it's going to take days. So the first step is the hardest. But once you take the first step, the next step becomes easier. And of course you'll be tired. I'm not saying about the tire part. The physical tiredness will happen. But mentally, all you're doing is walking. It's the first step that's the hardest. The first take takes determination. Takes energy. Takes a strong aspiration. The rest of it follows. Follows just close behind. It's the first step. So, you know, whenever ego comes to play, you know, take your ego and, you know, push it all the way down. Whenever you realize that ego's at play, keep quiet. Force yourself to keep quiet. No matter, you know, how many excuses come, you know, popping up into your head, keep quiet. No matter, you know, how badly you're being scolded, keep quiet. Let the scolding happen. And accept it. You know, birds, in the morning, you know, they cry, right? In the morning, they sing in the morning. Who knows? They could be scolding you every morning. You know, a bird could be coming into your garden and scolding you every morning. Why? But you've learned to accept it, right? You've learned to think, oh, okay, the bird's just singing. You've learned to accept it. Do you start changing yourself because of this bird who's scolding, you know, this house and this people living in this house? Because of this house, I can't eat the worms that are in the floor, you know, curse everyone in the house, you know. You don't care. You've accepted it. You've accepted it. Whether it's something you've done or it's something you haven't done. You've accepted it. One reason is because you don't understand. Other reason is because, you know, you've accepted that birds sing. Sing their scolding, sing their curses. All we have to do is accept others. Accept other people's. Now, this person's like this, okay. So what? Don't do this. Okay. Do this. Okay. You're such a great person. Okay. How could you have done such a thing? Okay. Accept nature for what it truly is. Accept nature. Accept nature. This is nature. Whether you're praised or scolded, that's nature. Accept it. So what? You shouldn't care. I mean, you should care for the advice. The advice you take, and you change yourselves accordingly. But apart from that, it's okay. Let's say someone labels you. They say, you know, this person has a very short temper. You know, be very careful when you deal with him. They've labeled you to be someone with a short temper. Should you care? Should you care? Okay. Someone said they have a short temper. Okay. Someone spreads around the gossip saying that, you know, I have a short temper. Okay. So what? Let's say you actually do have a short temper. Still. Okay. What's wrong with it? That's like saying, you know, this is blue. Oh no, the pen starts being thinking, I'm labeled blue now, I can never be red again. No, it just accepts it. Just accept it. It's okay. All we can do is try to change. You know, you make a mistake. It's fine. Don't hide it. You've made a mistake. It's okay. Because not the end of the world, is it? You know, you still have an entire, you know, it's not the end of the world. You've done a mistake. Okay. All you do is change. That's all that has to happen. Yeah. Whether you're praised or scolded, it's both the same. Both of these are what? Because, for example, right now, this mic. Does this mic know that I'm praising you all? You know, you are all such great people. Does the mic know that? You know, you're horrible people. Why on earth are you all here today? Does the mic know I'm scolding? The mic just perceives. Oh, mic just picks up the sound. The mind just picks up the sound. Because, you know, what is your mind? Your mind is what perceives. Technically, your mind doesn't perceive scolding. Technically, your mind doesn't perceive scolding. Scolding is what is the output of many minds put together. You know, what's one of the worst things as well? Is that sometimes you start connecting dots. You know, maybe, you know, Simon was talking about scolding because the other day this happened, that happened. You know, it's sometimes very crazy that sometimes you come and sit down for Guru Nanak's sermons or at least any set of sermon. And sometimes Guru Nanak or your teacher starts talking about something that you do. And you think, how does he know? And you start thinking, oh, probably because this person said something about this. That person probably has said something, and therefore, you know, Guru Nanak found out. And that's why he's talking about it. We love connecting dots. You know those dot-to-dot drawings? You know, you have to go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you'll take a step back and it's a dinosaur. We love those. Because how our mind does that every single day. You know, it takes advantage of everything to connect dots. Oh, today we're talking about scolding because the other day this happened. That happened. And therefore, this and this and this and this. Therefore, this, 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 and this. And you take a step back and you see a massive image. You know, the stronger your views are, the worse this is. The stronger your views are, the worse this becomes. Because then you start thinking that these dots So it's like this. You go, you start connecting dots, one, say, to five. You connect one to five, you take a step back, and it looks like a dinosaur. So you think it is a dinosaur. But you still haven't connected the rest. You know, because of our ability to connect dots, we can't actually enjoy life. For example, you know, if you think that if something actually did happen, I have no idea if whether someone got scolded or not or whatnot. No, this is a topic that came to my head. But if you were to be scolded, have been scolded, or something was to have happened, then you can't enjoy the sermon for what it is. Because then you're thinking, oh, then all the news have gone out. If Nazi knows, then that means every other monk in the monastery knows. And if every monk in the monastery knows, how my reputation's ruined and da 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 da. Connecting dot after dot after dot after dot. You aren't able to enjoy. You aren't able to, you know, enjoy what is happening when it's happening. You aren't able to enjoy life because you're now connecting every dot and saying, oh, this happened, that happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And that may happen. This probably had happened. Connecting the weirdest of dots to make a picture. You know, when we even talk about memory, you use your memory as well as alter your memory the same way. At the same time, you read your memory and write back onto it. For example, let's say someone gives you let's say someone gives you this pen. Someone gives you this pen, and you think, oh, okay, I have now a whiteboard pen. And you think, okay, I got this whiteboard pen. This person's very nice. Gave me a whiteboard pen. And so I can write my whiteboard and da da da. The next day, you know, when you remember this event, you're not remembering the event as it is. You're remembering the event with the views that you have in that mind at that moment. For example, that morning, say someone came up and said, you know, that person, you know, he or she is a thief. And so when you remember about the pen, what's the first thing that comes to your head? How amazing they are for giving you a whiteboard pen? Now you think, that whiteboard pen that they gave, it's probably stolen. Probably the person probably bought it with their own money to give it to you because they wanted to give something to you. But you're now connecting the dots that may or may not have happened. Now, I'm not saying that all the dots are wrong. Because the world is cause and effect. There are causes that give rise to effects. But unfortunately, we're not the Buddha. We don't know exactly. But we're very good at connecting dots and saying, this happened because of this and this and this. Because we think that we are the kings and queens of cause and effect. We know cause and effect like that. That we are able to connect all these dots and say, and predict the future as well. We're able to connect the dots and predict the future as well. And make assumptions. Because now you can't enjoy the pen for what the pen is. Because now you're thinking, oh, because this pen, the person gave me this pen, but it's probably stolen. And now you can't accept the gift. Because you think that the gift is not a gift. Because we're not able to live this world for what it is. We're not able to accept nature for what it is. We try to live in this mind-made world, your world. Your world and my world, are they the same? your world and my world, are they the same? Technically, is there a your world, my world? What is there? A perception. A perception that happens at what moment? This moment. So there is no your world, there is no my world, but there is a perception. One perception. So, for example, you look at this, one person perceives one thing. Perception also happens here. Are those two perceptions the same? Are they the same? We'll never know. We'll never know. We'll never know. I know, I see this like this. What do you see? You see like this as well, right? Are we seeing the same thing? We'll never know. Because this mind perceives this. That mind perceives this. This is equal to this? We don't know. Because we're always talking about an observer. According to the observer, is this how it is? Now, that doesn't mean. See, this is when you can not fully understand this, right? This doesn't mean that you're seeing, I'm seeing a completely different thing to you. I'm seeing something like this. Right, but you're seeing this, I'm seeing this. Because this is a question that someone asked as well. What is this? It's a traffic light. Right. Or in Sri Lanka, a color light. Now, this doesn't mean, right, because every person who has learned to drive, or at least who knows to drive, they know when the light turns red, you have to stop. Now, does that mean we all perceive the same thing? When the light turns red, so it's red now, do we all perceive the same thing? Do we all perceive the same thing? But we all stopped our cars. We all stopped the cars, right? And there's no person who thought it's green and drove off. So aren't we perceiving the same thing? Isn't the entire world perceiving the same thing? That's why in, I hope, every country, I don't know, whenever you see a red light, you stop. I think in most countries at least. So isn't the entire world perceiving the same thing? That's why they stop. No? Aren't we all perceiving a red traffic light here? Does anyone see this to be green? Do we stop at green? No, we stop at red. So we're perceiving the same thing, are we? Aren't we? If we're not perceiving the same thing, why do we all stop? Why do we all stop? We don't all perceive the same thing. Not the same thing. But this is a symbol. This is a sign. This sign is perceived. Is it the same way we perceive it? Maybe not. But we all have the view that at a red light, or when this is like this, we stop. So are we all perceiving the same thing? Who knows? Who knows? We hope so. But we all stop because we know if this, then stop. For example, we all look at this pen and we say it's a red whiteboard pen. Is it because we're all perceiving the same thing? No, it's because we all are perceiving, and we've identified this to be what? A red pen. Not that we're all perceiving the same thing. Because your perception, or the perception that's happening in that mind, and the perception that's happening in a completely different mind, are just what? Perceptions. Perceptions are always the coming together of different causes. Perceptions are always the coming together of different causes. What are the causes? For you to perceive this red traffic light. I don't have a green pen today, so if I'd call it a green traffic light. Right? For us to perceive a red, what does that mean? The causes have to have aligned in some sort of way for us to perceive a red traffic light. And for us to identify and say, stop. For us to identify and say, stop. So what are the causes? What are the causes? Number one, eyes. Two, light. Three, brain. Four, so these are in no order, these are just random order. The mind, or the mind base at least, as well as memories, views. Because if you can't remember, this is red. Like for example, in some countries, again, I think, red is down here. But you still stop. Why do you still stop? Because you identified red. For that, you need memories. For that, you need views. And then they all come together. All these things, when they come together at the exact, in the right arrangement, out comes the perception of what? Traffic light? Red. Therefore, it comes out the output of stop car. Now, for this process to happen, are each of our processes the same here? Are all our eyes the same? No, very easy, you know. I think almost just over 50% of us are wearing glasses, wearing spectacles. And as well as, you know, we all have different abilities to see. Our eyes all work differently, different number of rods, different number of cones, different number of nerves. Some of us has 20/20 vision. Some of us are trying to have 20/20 visions. But each and every one of us, eyes are different. What about light? Is light the same? No. Because there are several lights here, all pointing at different angles. You're seeing this in different lights. As well as if you think about me, for me, if I don't know, when I look like this, this looks like a very nice rectangle. But trust me, you look at this way, it looks like an actual really good rectangle. Drawing looks very nice this way. But if you were to change angle, rectangle distorts and looks more like a trapezium. A much wider trapezium. Much wider. Here it looks very skinny. Why is that? The causes are different, the arrangement is different. The arrangement is giving rise to different effects. As well as memory. I think there are countries with the red light in the bottom. I don't know. I think I've seen some. Could be, might not be. I've not seen any with the red light in the middle. But if there is, could be. But again, these are all different what? Arrangements of different causes. different causes, different arrangement. Therefore, effect is different. But the end perception is the same. Similar, not the same. Similar, but not the same. So are we all perceiving the same thing? Are we all perceiving the same thing? No, every single time. You have to remember that it's always cause and effect. If we are perceiving the same thing, so when we look at this bouquet in front of me, if we are seeing the same thing, that means it cannot be cause and effect. Can it? Because we are seeing bouquet. Bouquet is the thing that you see. But actually, it's always cause and effect that's at play. Hundreds of causes giving rise to hundreds of different effects, slightly varying from another. For example, you know, some of you may not see these colors as vibrantly as others. Like they say, females can see colors better than males. Can we prove that? Can I prove it? I don't know. But again, going to science, that females can see colors more vibrantly than males, with a better saturation, whatnot. So the males in the room, we can't see the colors as well as females. That's why females take a lot of time, you know, picking out clothes, because their colors are very, very, very strong. But anyway, so are we perceiving the same thing? If we are perceiving bouquet the same way, that means it's not cause and effect. That means it's something fixed that's coming into us. That we're perceiving something that's very fixed. Everyone perceiving this. However, it's always cause and effect. Different causes coming into line to give rise to different effects. That's what it is. For example, even though I'm talking about this bouquet, I haven't seen it. I don't know, I'm assuming it looks good. I can only see the top half of it. I don't even know what colors there are. I can probably see white, purple, bit of blue, and green, of course. I don't know, below, is there any red? No? But you're all perceiving what? Bouquet. I'm also perceiving what? Bouquet. Are we perceiving the same thing? I think what's even better is, if you ever had a conversation after a sermon, so for example, you listen to Guru Han's sermon, right? He has 4.5 hour sermon. And you start conversing with another person about the sermon. It's funny how different people will have perceived different things. Because why? They focus on different things. They understand different things. Their views will give rise to different understandings. So it's very interesting. You ask them, like, what did Guru talk about today? You ask one person, so for example, if you ever missed a sermon and you try to get a recap from someone else, you have to ask at least 5 different people to get an actual image or actual understanding of what Guru actually talked about. Because different people focus on different things. As well as their own views and knowledge will alter the message in some sort of way. Which is very interesting to see. If you ever get an opportunity, do that. It's very, very interesting. Because different people will actually focus on different parts of his sermon. And when you ask 5 or 6 people, you have a very clear understanding of how different people understand things. So even though we talked about, you know, bouquet here, everyone would understand it something differently. Because it's all what? Just cause and effect. Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Is that bad? Is that good? It's nature. I don't know. I think, you know, we all have this idea, like, oh, it's all bad or very good. No, we have to accept nature, whether it's not good or bad. Is it raining? It's raining. Is that a good or bad thing? It's nature. But we're very quick to judge and say, oh, you know, raining's bad. I didn't bring an umbrella. And because I didn't bring an umbrella, I'm going to become really wet. And wet being wet is a bad thing. Is it? Do you not remember when you were young, you used to enjoy being wet in the rain? Running in the rain? Getting completely drenched in the rain? something that we used to enjoy. But after you grow older, now without being wet in the rain is horrible. You know, sometimes we become allergic to water. And therefore, you know, when it starts raining, you have to have an umbrella and you have to keep yourself dry. Being sick is something different. It's beyond that, right? I understand. But whether it's a good or bad thing, no, it's nature. So we all perceive something, but we're not perceiving the same thing. Is that a bad thing? No, it's nature. Accept it for what it is. We don't need to go around saying that, oh, it's a horrible thing. You know, me and you can't perceive the same red. Oh, horrible. No, it's okay. That's why, you know, whenever you converse with someone, whenever you have a conversation with someone, it's always best to ask them what they understood. So you give them a task. So you say, can you go to the Dhamma Hall and pick up 3 brooms and come back? It's always best to ask, what do you need to do? So you understand that they've took the message that you wanted them to take. Because, you know, 99% or 95% of all problems are what? Communication errors. All you have to do is just ask. What do you have to do? Go to Dhamma Hall and bring back 4 brooms. No, not 4, 3. What? 3 brooms. Good. Now go. Because why? Because we all focus on different things. For example, when you're talking and they say, you know, there's a butterfly behind me, right? Most of you will focus on what I say. But also on the butterfly. So you're misinformation. That's not wrong. That's also what? Cause and effect. Because, you know, if there was something behind me, which there isn't, thank God, you wouldn't be able to focus on everything I say. And is that bad? No, that's nature. We have to understand nature and accept it. That's all we have to do. By understanding and accepting nature, we're able to, you know, live in nature, accepting nature, and, you know, live happily. Or not live happily, but almost perceive happily. Living in the present moment. That's all we have to do. So is being scolded a bad thing? Is it a good thing? It's just a thing. Not a good thing or bad thing, it's just a thing. A thing of nature. So whether you are scolded, whether you're being praised, that's why, you know, for Arithanuansis, what do they say? That they don't feel a difference between what? Praise or scold. You know, that's like Sariputta Maharajanuansis says, well, I'm like a carpet. People can, you know, wipe their feet on me. Meaning, people can scold me, can do anything with me. Or, you know, they can, you know, wash me and clean me with, you know, rose water. But I accept nature. It doesn't matter. See, that's all we have to do. Just accept nature for what it is. Once you do that, you're able to live, or you're able to come to the present moment and live happily. That's all you have to do, just understand. That's the beauty. All you have to do is understand, nothing more. Whenever you meet your teachers, you know, see how much ego is at play. When you're scolded, when you're praised, check yourself. See if you want to give excuses. If you want to give excuses, keep quiet. It's a fight against yourself. To keep at it. All right. Next week, we have cutting the ceremony. We have the cutting the ceremony, and this is I cordially invite all of you, those of you who have a choice, to come and enjoy the cutting the ceremony. Because I think that's one of the biggest events that we have every year. I mean, all of our events are very big, I agree. But Katna is also one of the most special because it's one of the most meritorious. To be able to chant Pirith all through night. And then have various discussions, advice, and you know, all of these meritorious activities. I think Katna is a day that we get to do all five things for sustained Nibbana. We listen, you get to preach, but you get to chant and meditate and contemplate. Yes. That's the day you get to do all five of them. And that's why, Khatna is one of the most strongest days to do lots of merits. As well as it's one of the days that you get to stay overnight in the monastery. It's not something you get to do every day. But it's a time where you get to accumulate lots of merits by, chanting, by, being with amazing people, getting to lots of different meritorious activities, as well as, don't forget, the sewing of the katna robe. You all get a chance to do that. I can't remember the numbers, but they say every stitch is equivalent to thousands of births as the Sakradeva. So it's one of the most meritorious, as well as, it's a time where we all come together. So if you can come and join us on the Katna, please do. It's one of the most advantageous things, one of the biggest events. As well as invite other people to come as well, friends, families, people from your workplaces as well, to come and join in. It's just a 2-day program. But that also means, so next week is the fast. On the fast, we will not be having the English Psalm in the morning. Right? So we won't have the English Psalm in the morning. No English Psalm in the morning, but we have Katan in the afternoon and towards the second as well. As well as, another event. The week afterwards, we have an ordination ceremony where 8 of our most senior Anagarikas will no longer be called Anagarikas, will shed their white clothes and become maroon, crimson, color, some sort of color. Robes, right? We'll be able to don robes and join the Mahasangha, the Sangha. Not the Mahasangha, but Sangha. Why? Who's the Mahasangha? Bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, pasaka, pasaka. All of us. But join the Sangha, the monkhood. And so, 8 new brothers, 8 new names to study. All in good time. Yes, it's very difficult now. Because that's now, how many? 200? With these 8, it's almost like 200 and something. Names. Soon it'll be, Dhammapada will be one thing. Names of monks will be something else. Right? We have a book, Names of Monks. And you have to go through the books. Your teachers will tell you, study Dhammapada, one vagga of Dhammapada, and 150 names of the Sangha. It's going to be, it's a blessing. It's an absolute blessing to have, so many great people join our ranks, continue on their own. It's a journey that's taken by yourself, but also together. No one can walk it for you, but we all do it together. So we'll have, you know, these eight of our senior most anagarikas to come together and you know, we get to almost watch them be born as monks. And on that day as well, so that's the 8th, we will not be having the English Sermon either. So for 2 weeks, you have a 2 weeks holiday, right? Have a good rest. You will not be able to because Katina. Katina means you're going to have to not, you have to sacrifice your sleep and ordinary ceremony as well. But also have a good rest. 2 weeks. So yeah, so see, we have these amazing meritorious activities, which I do hope all of you do come. And I cordially invite all of you. And to join in these meritorious activities, because these are, although we have ordination ceremonies, like I say, every time, every 4 months. Not 2 months yet, 4 months. You know, these are very rare occasions. In our entire samsara, you know, seeing an ordination ceremony was one of the most rarest things. Like I said last week as well, you know, the event of a Buddha is rare. The event of the Dhamma is rare. The event of the Sangha is rare. If the event of the Sangha is rare, being able to watch an ordinary ceremony, you probably count them with your fingers. In your entire samsara, you probably could be able to count them. I mean, it's not something that's very common. Common, you know, in this life, or our entire, you know, samsaric journey. And let's not forget, when it comes to ordination ceremonies, our Anagarika Mahatmyas also have, you know, they get an opportunity to do one of the most greatest merits. What is that? For 7 days straight, give dana to the Mahasangha. If I believe so, it started today. Start today, and for 7 days straight, they'll be giving. See, the reason why we tell you all this, for the reason is because, not for you to think, oh, okay, information. No, for you to rejoice. Because the things that other people do, when you find out about them, rejoice. Give the rejoice with your full heart, because you may not be able to. You may not be able to do it. For example, maybe on the 1st of November, you may be busy. That's fine. Rejoicing can happen anyway. You may not be able to come to the ordination ceremony. Like for example, if you're maybe not be able to come in person, but that's fine. You can still rejoice. Rejoicing is you know, the same thing. Because a merit happens when your heart is filled with joy. Overfilled with joy is what merits are. So fill your heart with joy whenever you get to hear these things. Not think, you know, they get to do this, or you know, that's happening again. No, these are very, very amazing opportunities to do as many merits as possible. So rejoice. So 7 day dana, rejoice. Although you may not be able to give dana for 7 days, in your hearts and minds, you can give dana every single day. But these 7 days are special. Because it's for an ordination ceremony. Blessing the eight to be new monks on their journey towards Nibbana. As well as making a determination. And I hope you do make the determination. May the power of all those merits that you accumulate, may we all attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. I mean, this is the entire purpose of us in the monastery. I mean, all these events are for one thing and one thing only. For our own salvation. Don't forget that. That's why, you know, every day, remind yourself. That's why we're here. That's why we do what we do. Because as time goes on, we will forget. And as time goes on, there will always be someone there to remind you their purpose. Okay. So remember, next week, Katina. And I force, if I can force you all to come, I'll force you all to come, but hey ho, free will. And the week afterwards, ordinary ceremony. So for 2 weeks, we'll not be having the English sermon. Right. Oh, as well as, one more thing, sorry. Before I forget, these sermons are, we have now opened another channel for these sermons. So on YouTube, instead of it being on our normal English channel, it's now in a different channel called Buddha's Guide to Happiness. You'll find these sermons on that. This is, we're trying to spread as far and wide as we possibly can. As well as we have started several language channels as well, in different languages, in Tamil, in Hindi, in, I think Guru Hamdaru has started to do sermons in Telugu, Japanese, Chinese. We are opening many, many channels to spread the teachings of or the philosophy or all these things to help all people who have the merits to understand and be free from their own, you know, traps that they set for themselves. Almost, you can say, these are there to free people from themselves. To free people from themselves. So we have many channels opened as well as opening in the near future. As well as these sermons are also on a different channel as well. So, we're trying to spread our hands as far and as wide as we possibly can, reaching to every corner. Because, you know, that's what the Buddha said as well. No two people go in the same path. No two monks go in the same path. Spread the Dhamma as far and wide for the benefit of most sentient beings. Right. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits and conclude. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits required by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the chief prelates of all chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come in or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananansi, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to spread the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translated in sermon, share them with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the woof of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the bliss of plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also give one chance of merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continues to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, alms, robes, medicines, as well as those who pass in the know-how, extend their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, and nieces, our elders, friends, acquaintances, employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed and in physical mental ailments, May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who commit to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities who keep watchful eye over us, keep us out of harm's way. May the power they merit, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to our past relatives and ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those been friends and family and acquaintances in this even long journey in samsara. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to all those members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost life in the war with a friend or foe rejoice in the merits of Christ today. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to all the who've lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. May by the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the birth planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's make a resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits of Christ today. We've been a witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arithmanvasis, Arathmanvasis in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits of Christ today, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become an Arithmanvasi or Arathmanvasi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Jupiter be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen mitetnva Dvesha ginnen mitetnva Moha ginnen mitetnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhain Sukita taravitnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansepa lebeva Nivansepa lebeva Nivansepa lebeva Thunnuangi Susan Anantamahaguna Belen Sea Lok Sea Satyam Nibbana Pramisukin Sukhtarim.